It's Spoiler in Time, folks. On this episode of Spoiler in Time, we'll be talking about episode one of season two of Deadwood. We will also have some good news about Deadwood. Spoil season one, episode nine of Counterpart. And I'm Tom Merritt. Brian Brushwood, we're going to check in on the movie draft.
Oh, yeah. Let's check in on the movie draft.
It's a little preemptive, but...
Oh, man. Tom, do you remember last night? Because it's definitely Wednesday is when this came out. Do you remember last night
we had the movie draft? That's right. Now, patrons get Spoiler in Time 2 days before it's recorded.
So they may be a bit confused.
Yeah. But for the majority of you who just get it in your feed on Wednesday, you must have watched yesterday's movie draft and enjoyed all of Mike TV's songs as much as us.
Oh, my goodness. Do you remember that big surprise when somebody way overbid... And that
I could not believe that much money was left on the table.
Yeah, well, and boy, savvy bidding as well, if I remember. A bit of gamesmanship.
Well, and there's a little bit of controversy over that one bid that people felt like, well, wait a minute, it timed out before I got my bid in.
Well, the one thing we all agree on is, man, oh, man, did Mike TV have some funny introductory songs.
Yeah, especially the one about Truth or Dare. Wow.
Yeah, but I think we can all agree Cargill's team is going to be dead last yet again.
Scotch Team 6. Now, wait a minute. Are they the ones who got Solo? I can't remember.
I mean, he was so confident when he bid on it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's good that we still have that rule about bidding 100 and percentages. For sure.
Oh, man, something tells me we're recording this before we did it, but I'll be real surprised if Solo even reaches 100.
Oh, no. Bryce and I were talking about Avengers Infinity War has a bigger chance of reaching 100 than Solo.
Yeah, agreed.
If you want to play along.
Wait, hold on. Who do you think's going to win the movie draft, Brian? Yeah.
I think Chat Realm will, because the folks at home, they're going to make their own sled.
Oh, okay.
Sleek.
Yeah. You go to draft.diamondclub.tv if you want to see the up-to-date form of all the movie returns every week and see all the standings. And go to draft.diamondclub.tv/form. That will be where you can create your own slate using the prices that everyone did/will bet on all the movies.
Yeah, and in case you're new to this, you get to play along at home. At the prices, you get to figure out which ones we overbid, and you compete against the other players that we all watch together. It's a much more interesting update if you have a dog in the fight, so please make sure to take the time to make your own slate at draft.diamondclub.tv/form.
And also, we're going to do the Last with 100 League again, where... you try to spend all of your money and get the worst slate possible. And any extra money that you have left over counts against you. So check that out also.
Yeah, you just have to do it before the movies open, right?
I think so. I don't know if there's if it's a user limit or if it's before the first movie, but that means you have about a couple of days. You'll probably have before Friday.
There's still time unless you're watching this in June. All right. Let's talk about Counterpart, which ends with a guy falling down.
Across the border.
Ooh, they can't go in there because it's neutral territory. So I know I'm jumping right to the end and there's all kinds of other stuff that happens. But really, everything was pushing us to this moment, right? This is why the four people sneaked over. This is why they insinuated themselves into headquarters. This is why they started shooting people, I guess, is to cause a distraction so that he could get downstairs and fall down across the border and cause a diplomatic incident. Like, it's no man's land. So this is going to cause a big problem next week, I assume.
That's fascinating, because I didn't think that was their... Do you mean the storytellers? Is that why they did it? Or do you mean the actual agents? Because I don't think the agents came over just so that they could come back and fall down. I think
Justin
they would...
Justin Marks, I know you don't ever watch this stuff, but Justin Marks in the post-show interview says, this is why they were here, to get us to that moment.
Oh, wow. I thought that just... I thought they had a grander plan that just broke bad. I thought that they were going to try to open the floodgates and let their side through to have a war or something.
I presume they wanted to do more in the tunnel than just fall down dead, obviously. But yeah, maybe it was open the floodgates. Maybe it was seize control of it so that only they controlled the passageway. But I find it, no matter what, I find it odd that they're, if barring a physical reason that they couldn't go down, why don't they just run down and grab him and pull him back?
Well, and the answer, of course, is because, you know, they have a fragile truce. I mean, in the metaphor of East and West Germany, you know, the answer is you couldn't very well do that there either. That's why there was this no man's land and so on. Well,
but they just violated the truce, right? A bunch of people just shot a bunch of folks up. You think that would give them the excuse to retrieve that person?
But keep in mind, nobody knows they were swapped. Now East Germany gets to the other side gets to act indignant that what is this? You guys had some rogue people on your end go crazy and try to come over and attack our side.
Yeah, I would see that as a gambit. But again, I still think you'd go down and pull him out and deal with, you have the same diplomatic indignancy if you pull him back.
Yeah.
I guess where I'm going is, I wonder if I'm missing something. Is there some other reason they can't go down there? Can you not have more than one person at a time?
Well, okay. So if you're talking about football teams, then yeah, they came from the West Side. So the West Side team should be able to grab them and pull them back off of the West Side border. But we're not talking about the team. We're talking about a man who knows the moment they walk down there and drag the body back, they themselves will be instantly locked up and out of the game entirely. So it makes sense that those two players wouldn't even consider walking down there to instantly spend the rest of their lives in a gulag.
Well, think about what you're arguing is they don't have the confidence in their position because they're lower level.
No, I think that they want to remain a relevant player in this game, so they're not going to walk down there and go get it. And the guys,
well, that's what I mean. Like it, you know, all things being equal, I guess there might be surveillance on there, but I could just walk down there and pull them back and say, oh no, all I did was retrieve someone in the pursuit of a gunman. I happened to cross, you know, maybe I put a foot across the border, whatever. There's a precedent to this happened in Panmunjom, which is the border, the truce village between North Korea and South Korea, where a North Korean soldier technically in pursuit of a defector strayed into South Korea, but then as soon as they discovered it, ran back, and the defector ended up getting away. I could see it being that sort of excusable error and
sure,
and using that as a diplomatic chip of like, oh, no, we were just pursuing the gunman. Yeah, maybe we stepped foot into the no man's zone, but
all of that works there
and we pulled him back.
All of that works if this was a natural event. It does not work when we as the viewers and they as the people there know that these are other siders who are masquerading as our siders going in. So and then once that happens, you can't, there's no, do you think the other side is like, oh, well, yeah, I guess you're right. It was no big deal.
No, but I don't think it makes it worse. And in fact, now you have a bargaining chip because you have that person on your side.
Man, this is crazy. You're saying you physically in this exact situation from Counterpart would walk down there and drag the guy's dead body back to what effect? To what benefit?
Now we control it 100%, and all the other side can do is protest that we stepped over a line, and we'll say like, no, we didn't. Prove it. Oh, maybe we did. It was an accident. We were pursuing a gunman.
You don't control it at all. They broke all the keys off. The doors are locked open. If they go into that no man's, that's the whole thing he was doing, twisting him to green and then knocking off the key. Congratulations, you just violated everything, broke everything, and you're the proud owner of this dead body from another sider pretending to be your sider.
I just don't see, without there being some other physical reason, why you wouldn't retrieve the body.
Because it's all downside and no upside. What is the upside to grabbing that body?
We now control it.
It's a dead body.
We can say we've proven that this is you. Like I don't see the downside to not retrieving it, not grabbing it. You've given something to the other side.
Understand the whole reason they did this, is to make it look like. So we'll just say our side, West Germany. The whole reason this whole event happened is so that it appeared as though to everybody involved, because if they did it right, nobody knows. It looks like a few people in West Germany went nuts and tried to break into East Germany. East Germany is now justified in doing everything. The two people at the top of the stairs are the only ones who know that, are virtually the only ones who know that this is not one of their own. If they go down and grab the body to retrieve it, it only makes it look much more like they're acknowledging that's one of their own, and it makes them an accomplice on it, which would be a terrible tactical position, and it would give East Germany even more leverage. It would play into East Germany's hands. That's exactly what East Germany would want them to do, is to go down and make this an international incident. So,
well, it's already an international incident. I don't see how it makes it worse to say, ah, we were apprehending this gunman, whether it's East or West Germany, and pulled them back to our side.
Correct. But okay, but then it's the difference between between watching an international incident happen and deciding you want to now participate directly in it, because right now they have not participated in it. They watched it happen, but the moment they go down there and touch the body, they are an active participant, and it's undeniable. And I don't understand what the possible benefit to actively becoming a participant in it would be.
Because you control the body.
So what?
Because now you don't have to share the investigation. Control all the information.
It would be proof of subterfuge and of people.
But it wouldn't. It would be indistinguishable. That's the whole reason that they break the legs in the exact same way, so that they're exactly the same person. You would have no proof, no evidence. It's a dead body that can't talk, that has the same documents, has the same DNA, the same fingerprints, the same everything. Now you're somebody who drug a body across what should be an investigation that takes place on two borders. Plus, what are you going to scrub the blood off and they're not going to find the DNA? This is an insane notion to go down
there. It's just that you're going to make them come over to your side if they want to participate in the investigation.
And
which gives
spark
you
a war? Why would that be helpful?
Why would that spark a war more than what happened already?
Because what happened now is you have an investigation to do, and it has to be a joint investigation.
And you can either share the investigation or control the investigation.
Well,
grab
the body. Okay, that's proper channels. Okay, so imagine it this way. Imagine this was not orchestrated by the other side. Imagine it happened naturally, right?
Right.
One of your people goes crazy, dies, DNA on both sides of the border.
Yeah.
You have an existing agreement that says we both have to participate in this stuff. If you went down and said, well, that's really one of our guys, and drug him back over, then you are directly violating this international agreement.
Well, you, if they believe that that's a West German person, already violated it.
No. Not you standing at the top of the stairs. Someone on your team did, but not you standing at the top of the stairs. This is
the
part
I did. So you don't cross the border. You just retrieve the body. I just don't see.
But the agreement says, I mean, you would get to do that no more than you would get to use a fishing line to steal the wallet out of somebody on the other side of the border. That's on the other side of the border. That belongs to them.
Oh, on your side of the border and their side of the border. You don't have to cross the border to pull him back.
Yeah, okay. Then by that logic, you just build a giant Inspector Gadget arm that reaches all the way in to East Germany and slaps the face of the premier.
Then the thing you're holding crosses the border. You never have to cross the border to pull this body back.
The moment you grab the feet of the body, that's your Inspector Gadget arm, and
no,
it's grabbing
it's the
fingers.
Body that fell. And we didn't realize it was all the way across the border. Sorry,
man,
our mistake.
You know what?
Let's go from here.
I'm gonna tweet Justin Marks and make him listen to your words, and then we'll see what you think.
Anyway, all that said, it's a totally forgivable thing. I'm not going to spend any more time thinking about it than we've already discussed it, because it is going to be a fascinating play of events. I just was curious if there was another reason they couldn't go down there. Right?
Maybe to tell the audience that this is an important plot point and where the story is going.
Like a physical, like, oh, there can't be more than one person in there because the field causes problems.
That part was ambiguous for me. It wasn't until the final scene clearly showed the border, and I was like, oh, it's a border thing.
We also don't know how much the other side knows about what's happening. Like, they may know that the door is opened, but we have no idea whether anyone was expecting them on that side, whether they know about when alarms get tripped on that side.
And by the way, I think it's really interesting, Tom, that because there is a giant glaring hole in this episode, but it's not the one that you picked.
Well, that I didn't pick a hole. I just said, honestly, where my attention is why is there only one person allowed at a time? Why can't they go down in there because that person is down there? Is it purely social? Or is there something else like within the world that is a scientific-ish explanation? I'm still curious about that because that is a little ambivalent. What is the hole that you saw that bothered you?
The fact that the dude who got his eye poked out in Utopia, spoiler alert, what's his name? Started with a K.
Casper.
Casper is going nuts because he wants to go visit his son on the other side. There can't be his son on the other side.
Also, because Pope could have been lying, right? I mean, if this dude was going to fall for his rescue plan.
And that's the one thing that makes sense. All right, so here's the problem. Everybody who was being replaced was alive during the split.
Right.
And that makes sense because they're the same person, same DNA, same story. You just swap them, right? But everybody who was born after the split has no counterpart.
Right, or if they do, it would be a wild coincidence. It's not guaranteed. It's probably unlikely.
Yeah. Yes. Like one in 3 million.
Yeah.
Well, and actually even more than that, because they would have to make love at the same time. And anyway.
In
fact, before we got to that part, we paused. We saw the stuff, and we paused it, and we talked it out. And it's like, well, think about it. The only people we've seen trained to replace their counterparts has been somebody old enough to have a counterpart on the other side. Right. And when we saw those kids in the school, they weren't specifically appearing to learn from the lessons about their counterparts. They were just learning about our world. You know, oh, over there, 9/11 happened. Over there, that happened. And so I had done all this mental gymnastics to say, okay, so the ones that they're replacing are one-to-one transfers because they're the same person, but... But all the next generation of kids, maybe the ones that are over there, they're going to get documents and forge identities for them, and then they'll bring them over and they'll slowly, you know, take over the culture from the inside. I had done all that gymnastics, and then Casper's like, I want to see my son on the other side.
Okay, let's solve for X. How could Casper possibly have a son on the other side? One solution is Casper's from the other side. Is there anything that prohibits that?
In that case, that's just the problem in reverse.
Let's say Casper was on the other side after the split, had a son, then came to our side.
Yes. Well, then in that case, why is he completely heartbroken about all the children that were killed at the school?
Because the death of a child is very sad.
Well, no. But then why did he take all of his... like, they clearly, from a storytelling standpoint, they clearly indicate that his box is filled with all of his son's artifacts because his son was on that side and one of the ones that was killed at the school.
Oh, wait. Yeah, we're talking about the lie detector guy. I was
getting
confused.
Correct. Right.
Yeah, so maybe he's from our side, I guess, and then was brought over... to their side,
okay,
and held hostage.
If that's the case,
and he's sad about the school children because has a son and hasn't seen him, and he's sad. Yeah,
if that's the case, then why did his captors say, "Hey, that's not your son over there. It's someone else's son. It belongs to the other guy."
Silk said that, yeah.
And so in that case, now we're suddenly writing for Silk being confused.
Okay, Silk doesn't know. It could be Pope, Casper thought he was. This was his chance to get away when clearly he was going to be assassinated.
Sure.
I think the most likely scenario in this specific instance is that Casper or that Pope lied and said, "Oh, you got a family and
okay,
a kid."
That lie only works because every single person in that room is familiar
with
the way the split works. And so they would all have to believe that would make sense.
For X, Casper had a son who died, and his feelings for the son on the other side are the same as Howard's are for the daughter he never knew on this side.
But
remember, Howard didn't have children and was sad about that. And when he met his daughter, not his, but Howard Prime's daughter, he was like, oh my gosh, over here I have a daughter, and he gets attracted to that life. Maybe it's that in reverse.
Oh,
where Casper is like, I never had a son, or my son died here. And even though I know that's not mine,
it's mine. A son.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could have a son if I go over there.
It would be the son I would have had. Okay. It would be another son.
Yeah,
the same son. Okay, well then I'm watching close.
More speculation than we have information. You know,
it's tricky. Like, it's tricky because I thought the same thing. I'm like, well, wait a minute. If it's a son, then not the son that he had over here, because it couldn't be, right? So yeah. Also, what else do we got going on? Howard decides to head back home.
Yeah.
Because he realizes this isn't his family and he needs to get back to his real life.
Man, I'll tell you what, man, I was spending the whole time like making notes on things I cared about. And then all that went out the window when it became an action flick at the end and it just overshadowed everything in a good way. I mean, it's like it showed a big buildup and a big payoff. It does, man, those inconsistencies in the world building. I mean, I'll go along for the ride if it's like, just don't worry about it. It doesn't matter. Then I'll go with it. But it's just they've created such a specific world that I don't want to see them break it in my mind, you know?
Well, they may not have. They may not have. And if they have, it's only the one time. I can't imagine that they have been this careful through 9 episodes only to just let that drop and not explain it. So,
yeah, I'm hoping that's the case as well.
Because they've been too careful to let something like that important and that obvious.
Gambling Man in the chat says, I can't wait until Amazon Prime teams up with our Amazon.
Boo.
I like that.
Oh my gosh. This has never been the real Amazon. That's why it's Amazon Prime.
Okay. So if you're going to gamble, if you're going to place a bet, do you think it is a science fiction-y portal reason that they couldn't go down there and there can't be one at a time? Or do you think it's an international agreement reason?
I would bet it's an international agreement reason, and I will be slightly disappointed if that's all it is, but I'll live with it. It's fine. You have explained at length ways in which that works. I would rather it's just cleaner and tighter if it's like, oh, but you also can't have more than one in there, because then that adds the added complexity of, well, how do we get them out then?
Yeah. Well, I guess at that point it's property. And so they have the ability to communicate from one side to the other, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because they have those rooms, right?
Yeah. So they're probably going to have diplomats in those rooms talking through everything.
Yeah,
and the official story will be one of your guys went crazy and tried to break. See, I still think it's not even.
I don't think there will be as much confusion over who's from which side. I think that our side will say these were replacements. We have plenty of evidence of that.
I
think the Prime side will say, yes, we are aware, but it wasn't us. It was a rogue element, and we will, you know, help fight, and that it'll proceed from there.
Yeah, I think it was a conspiracy, and I think the number of people who know that there are replacements is like 5 in all of our side, and that's not enough people for them to affect the negotiations or story. They're going
to
say
people all the way to the top. I mean, it's the top people that know about this possibility. So I don't see how they would be.
Well, I didn't get the impression that they were at the top at all. I got the impression they were pretty high.
Knows, and Quayle's dad or Quayle's father-in-law knows.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
No, he doesn't. He thinks that's his daughter. He doesn't know that his daughter was murdered.
No, his daughter is one of the ones that have been replaced, but he knows about rogue agents. They've fed those reports up.
That's right. Well, he certainly knows when he saw his secretary go crazy and start shooting people.
That's not like her. She usually drinks my coffee black, not shoot me.
My guess is a lot of people know now that I think about it. Interesting. Okay. Well, man, yeah, consider me totally invested and dialed in on episode 10.
Yep. All right. We've got some good news about Deadwood that's not even really spoilery before we start spoilering the season premiere of season 2. David Milch has apparently turned in a screenplay to HBO for a revival of Deadwood. They're eyeing a fall 2018 production start. The script reportedly revolves around a fire that consumes the town based on a fire that happened in Deadwood in 1879 that took down 300 buildings and would send Al Swearengen fleeing by barge.
Now, does that mean like will only does that mean we're following the story of Al Swearengen, or are we following the story of Deadwood without Al Swearengen, or both?
I don't know. I mean, if I had to guess, I would say we're probably going to see Bullock leading the fight to put out the fire, mm-hmm. Because historically his hardware store burns and he builds the current structure. Like it's like a hotel that exists in Deadwood on that space. So I would imagine like a dual plot where the A plot is Bullock leading the firefighting, and the B plot is Swearengen escaping by barge. And then there's a question of whether, you know, Al acted honorably by leaving the town, and what adventures it gets up to down the river.
And keep in mind also, the headline just says Deadwood Revival. For some reason, I figured it would be a one-off like movie, but it sounds from what you've said so far that it could be a series, right?
Okay.
Just resuming the series.
Let me just back off of the Deadwood stuff. You just said, well, the headline says this, but Tom said that. None of those are sources.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. From what I just heard here, I guess here's my question. Does it say anywhere in there if this is supposed to be? I mean, all it says is screenplay. Is that a movie screenplay or a television screenplay?
The project has not been greenlit. The creator has turned in a screenplay. Cast members have been approached. We don't know.
So which would you prefer, just a one-off movie or a total resumption of Deadwood?
I think I'd strike a balance. I think I'd like a miniseries, like a 3 or 4 episode, maybe even 6. But a short, like let's wrap up these characters in sort of a 4 or 5 episode arc.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd be down for that. I don't think I'm quite ready to see it just totally rebooted again. Or
all
restarted.
The previous rumors were about movies, though. So if I had to put my money down, I'd bet that they just do a movie.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Deadwood, which we are, what did you think of season 2, episode 1?
It felt more like a continuation than I expected. Because you remember last week, I said the finale really kind of felt like a series finale. Like you could have ended it right there and everybody had a little bit of a wrapping up. So I was wondering where we would pick up, and we picked up right after the last episode. You know, the wife and son come to town and awkwardly call each other Mr. Bullock and Mrs. Bullock. And I had no idea build a house for him. That was new, but otherwise it's, you know, it's him still getting it on with the widow and Al Swearengen still swearing about all of the interference of the government as they move in to legitimize Deadwood. And it felt very continuous. How about you?
Quick sidebar. Am I remembering right? Anna Gunn was in the very first episode when he leaves, right? Was she, or is this her first appearance as his
question.
Wife?
Yeah.
Because at first I had forgotten, and I'm like, oh, it's Anna Gunn.
Yeah.
And
I saw Anna Gunn and was like, oh, look, Breaking Bad. I had not remembered her being in Deadwood at all.
And what's funny is I had the exact same question at that moment. And then I thought, wait, I seem to remember Tom saying, oh yeah, Anna Gunn was in it. That was a treat. So it may be that it was we forget a lot.
Yeah, we do. No, according to IMDb, the first episode she in is A Lie Agreed Upon, Part 1, which
okay.
is this episode.
So. All right. Well, then I'm not going to fret no more about that. Seth Bullock is kind of a real piece of jerk. he doesn't write about any of that. And then when gets called out with significant glances, says, as you know from my letters, my wife, Ms. Bullock, I guess I'll play along with your letters. And then and then they go to the house and she's like, hey, what's going on? You didn't send no letters. And then and everybody like agrees that there were letters. And then she's like, there was no letters. What's your really feeling? What's the deal here? And he goes, I think this letter, the last letter that I sent you, has all the details you need. And of course, no mention of nothing. There is no you and me. It's a fine house. Enjoy it. And that's that. Like,
No, that was all kinds of weird, that relationship.
It made me really kind of dislike Bullock a lot in that moment.
Well, he's being cold as ice to her. Very obviously, you know, the whole awkward scene where the widow comes and says hello, and she's like, "Oh, so you're who he's banging?" Like, is the look, and it's just all uncomfortable for everyone. And then, yeah, he's not like, "Look, you know, I'm really sorry, but we've set you up good, you know, and I hope, let me know if there's anything you need. I got to get back." No, it's like everything you need to know is in that. It's like he's mad at her. And we as the viewer have no reason to understand why he's mad at her other than he married her because his brother died. And that's not her fault.
Yeah. And while we're on the subject of weird things, I did not understand. I mean, I understand that Swearengen got upsetting news, drank a whole bottle of whiskey in the first 3 hours of being awake.
As he does.
And wanted to pick a fight with Bullock. But then they fought, and I'm like, when he set down the gun, he was like, there's no knife. And I'm like, okay, they just got issues. They're just hugging it out, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And then, but then that changes when Swearengen full on is going to murder Bullock because he has a knife. And then it's like, he intends to murder him. And then he goes, "Welcome to Deadwood." And then walks away. And I'm like, oh, that was just for show. And then we hear him say, "I was totally going to murder Bullock over nothing, but then I saw a cow-eyed kid." And I'm like, what is happening? Yeah. Where are you? So, and then on top of that, Swearengen's number one lieutenant says, "Well, Swearengen's got to find out who's on his side. He's rallying the banners, and this is the way you get people on your team in Deadwood." I'm like, I mean, what?
What? Totally confusing. I at least could rationalize the irrationality of it a little bit. Like, okay, so Swearengen is out of his mind, right? He's anger drunk, and so he's got murder in his eyes. That's why he decides to almost kill Bullock, and then the cow-eyed kid jars him out of it and he comes to his senses. I guess I could buy that. All the rest of it though, I actually understand why Bullock fights with him too and wants it to be a fair fight because that's Bullock, right? But yeah, I don't understand how that's how you win people on your side. And it certainly did seem abrupt that he just stopped. It felt like they needed to have a fight in front of the Mrs. Bullock and the child.
Yeah, the only part that made sense to me is that Bullock would say, "I cannot afford this howling monkey to be spilling my one good secret to the world." Although it doesn't seem like as much of a secret as literally it's raining plaster down on everybody down below and they're all making coy remarks about who he's banging. But to me, I wrote that all off as television shorthand.
Bullock's angry because he's talking about his girl, right?
Yeah.
Alma's his girl and Swearengen's saying things that aren't nice and we'll settle this with fists. Like, I can kind of follow Bullock. I have a harder time figuring out Swearengen.
Swearengen, it's funny because I keep wanting to forgive him and think he's some kind of master tactician, but he's ineffective. He's insane. He's too nice when he should be mean. He's too mean when he should be nice.
Well, and maybe that's a more believable character. When you step back a little bit, it's like, if he's such a master tactician, why is he in Deadwood? Why is he running from a warrant? He's obviously a bit of a F up.
Yeah.
Or he wouldn't be there. But he went to Deadwood because in Deadwood, he can be the smartest guy in the room. And he doesn't like that it's getting legitimized because that won't be the case. That's why he doesn't like Bullock. That's why he doesn't like Sai, is he won't be the smartest drunk in the town anymore. And those flaws are showing. On a broad level, not looking at any particular instance, I can believe that as a character background.
On the flip side, we have his even darker image in Sai, Tolliver. Sai is like a petulant 15-year-old, completely, for as good as he is and has been the whole first season at keeping up this grinning devil facade of calm and collectiveness. Like, he's awful at it in this case. And it wasn't even like, I guess the one thing about Sai is he truly is addicted to what's her name? And Janie. She calls
Janie.
Yeah.
Joni.
Joni calls
Sai.
Joni calls his bluff and says, the die is cast. I'm going to walk over and do what you told me I could do. And you are either going to murder me or you're going to let this happen. And realizing he's been checkmated in that, because he knows he can't kill her because he's too in love with her, but he also can't let her go. He figures out some horse apples compromise of sending over a spy and insisting on a cut of everything. I guess I see all that, but man, that Powers Booth plays that with just that terrifying simmering rage. Like, yeah. Of all the characters in Deadwood, he's the only one that I would be most terrified to be locked in a room with.
No, absolutely. He's a sociopath. Swearengen's a little bit of an F up. He's a drunk, and you don't want to get on his bad side or he'll resignedly kill you. Whereas Sai Tolliver is a sociopath and is dangerous, and you don't want to be anywhere near him.
Agreed. Yeah. What else we got? We have the minor. I just feel like that whole opening set piece was just designed to be all like, it's Deadwood, everything's crazy. And they gave the action more thought than they gave the motivations. And that's too bad considering
how good
they've been about giving motivations for everything.
I mean, if this is as bad as it gets, I can forgive it. Cause it's like a worn out t-shirt where you're like, well, if I look at it right, it's still a shirt. I can still wear it, you know? It's not totally falling apart. So the plot is a little bit worn there, but it definitely comes back together, and I'm still enjoying it. So.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. And look, the worst Deadwood is better than the best
Wood Dead.
Yes. Well, good save.
Thanks. Hey, everybody. Have you heard the news? This is spoiler time, and we want your support. We'd actually like to make it easier to access past spoiler and shows, not just the full shows. But if you're like, I just want to find where they were talking about Game of Thrones, we'd like to make that easy. So if we get spoiler and time up to 1,850 patrons or $1,850, either one, we will do that. Spread the word up your pledge. Or pledge for the first time if you haven't at patreon.com/cordkillers. We'll spoil you again next week if you're not careful.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.